Second hour, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you on this Tuesday. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Titans 0-3 for the second straight year, going on the road to take on Houston, who is also 0-3, the AFC South Toilet Bowl, Sunday from NRG Stadium.
And is that at 4 a.m. or midnight? Or
yeah, it should be 4 a.m. on the CW.
That'd be great.
Just find the, you know, call up the ACC and be like, hey, how do we get this game on the CW? Do you think they can push the Gilmore Girls reruns for a couple hours?
And it's only going to be in standard definition, not high definition.
Right. So. No, yeah. We don't want people getting too good of a look at that game. Titans at risk of going to 0-4. Again, they're starting a three-game road trip here. The wheels are coming off if they're not already off. And, again, we're asking the question of when does it make sense to fire the head coach? I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but it seems likely that Brian Callahan is not the head coach next year.
Yeah.
And we talk about these different archetypes of head coach. You've got the former player, leader of men, Mike Vrabel type guy. You've got the guru offensive coordinator, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, the young up-and-coming coordinator, I guess is what I'd call that. And then there's kind of that in the middle of, like, experienced offensive mind that maybe isn't an up-and-comer anymore but has been a head coach before. And I think that is where the Titans should go when they bring someone in. You need to bring in someone who you feel confident can develop Cam Ward. And you don't want to be worried about losing your play caller every single year, because that's what happens if you bring in a defensive-minded head coach, is that you're worried that your offensive coordinator is going to get poached, like what happened with Arthur Smith.
And Matt LaFleur.
And Matt LaFleur. Like, that is what you risk by having a defensive-minded head coach, is that you're going to have to replace your play caller consistently. So I think you go somewhere in the middle, and I know it seems obvious, right? Like, it seems just too in your face for it to actually happen. I think it's going to be Mike McCarthy.
I don't know if I like that. I mean, I get the whole concept as to why it would be Mike McCarthy.
I mean, it's Brinker and him work together in Green Bay.
It's the only way Brinker saves his job.
Well, yeah.
For me.
No, I don't know how Chad Brinker just keeps flying under the radar, but it does seem like Amy trusts him, and he is going to be very involved in picking the next head coach again. So, just using our context clues, all of our Mouska tools, I think Mike McCarthy is the guy who makes the most sense. It is an experienced guy who's been an offensive play caller before, and he has a tie to the leadership group. Like, it seems to make too much sense, and maybe they won't do that because it's so obvious, but, like, if I had to guess right now who is doing an introductory press conference at St. Thomas Sports Park in about 4 months, 5 months, it's going to be Mike McCarthy.
I mean, it's not a bad look. I mean, obviously that is a good, you know, shoe-in, hire in a roundabout way. I mean, for me, I think we had this conversation last week on Chase McJoe. I'm in the camp of Joe Brady.
Really?
I know he's a young guy, but he's, I think, established himself as a good play caller for Buffalo. He could be one of those guys that could really take your offense to the next level. And nonetheless, he developed with Josh Allen in a roundabout way, if that makes sense. I think if you can do that for Cam Ward, that might be – I mean, I get it. It's the NFL. Things don't change that much when it comes to play calling. But if you're the Titans and you want that next best thing, and Brian Callahan, obviously it didn't work out for him, but you go grab a guy like Joe Brady, in my opinion.
Well, Joe Brady, he has been good with the Bills so far. But he was a disaster with the Panthers in his first go-round as the offensive coordinator. But I agree with you. I think he is going to be one of the hot names on the job market this year in terms of up-and-coming offensive coordinator. I think the Titans are going to be scared of bringing in another first-time head coach, because as much as Brian Callahan has other faults, the biggest issue with Brian Callahan is he is just in over his head with being a first-time head coach. And I get you're getting rid of the, like, Brady wouldn't be a first-time play caller, so that does help you. But when you're firing Brian Callahan because he's not making the right in-game decisions and doesn't seem to have a grasp of being a head coach, I feel like the Titans are going to want to bring in someone with experience. I lean McCarthy just because of the obvious ties to Chad Brinker, and he's done it a couple times. He's won a Super Bowl. If you wanted a happy medium of, hey, you're getting someone with head coaching experience and somebody who can still be that up-and-coming, creative offensive mind, do you try and get Cliff Kingsbury from the Washington Commanders?
Now, that one kind of that makes me eye roll a little bit in a good way. I wouldn't be opposed to that. I like Cliff Kingsbury. I like what he's doing in Washington, primarily because he's utilizing Debo Samuel in a roundabout way. They didn't really utilize him in San Francisco. I think he calls it the It was a certain play that he's kind of, I guess, coined as his thing. It was like a sweep motion or something. I don't know. It was something unorthodox that we haven't seen in the NFL for a while, if that's the case. But it just screams something new. It screams turning a page in the NFL play-calling book. And I think that's maybe something the Titans may need.
I wouldn't hate bringing in Cliff Kingsbury. And he's worked with a number one overall pick before in your guy, Kyler Murray. And not saying that Kyler Murray has turned out to be this star, but like...
They're 2-1.
But like, he got them to the playoffs, and I think Cliff Kingsbury could end up being a decent hire. The question is whether he wants to leave Washington, because you do make yourself a little more vulnerable when you take those head coaching jobs. Like, Cliff Kingsbury is the offensive coordinator. If he just does a good job calling plays, you got pretty good job security there in Washington. And so far, he's been good. That team is up and coming. You've got a young quarterback who he could tie himself to for years. Like, we've seen this before where, you know, Josh McDaniels is the main example of great offensive coordinator. Every time he tries to leave Tom Brady, it ends up blowing up in his face. So I do wonder if Cliff Kingsbury would want to take a head coaching job. But I think those are the three guys that stand out to me. Those are the three I had written down: McCarthy, Kingsbury, Brady. You could go defensive. And I think if you went defensive, you look for the next Cliff Kingsbury, right, as your offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a guy like Mike McDaniel, who, I got to say, watching that game on Thursday night, Dolphins and Bills, some of the concepts that Mike McDaniel was pulling out of his hat, pretty cool. Like, he had a little throwback across the middle that worked out. If it doesn't work out, it looks stupid. But I wouldn't hate that idea. If you did want to go strong, defensive-minded head coach, leader of men, like a Brian Flores, who I know there's external factors of why he may not take a head coaching job. But if you did go that way, I think you'd have to find a coordinator who you feel good will be there for at least a couple of seasons, because you don't want Cam Ward going through, all right, well, he had Callahan, they fired him. Maybe had an interim coach for a little bit there. Now you bring in you bring in John Smith, who's this up-and-coming coordinator. I don't have a list in front of me. And he gets hired to be a head coach the next year. And now you have 4 play callers in 3 years for Cam Ward. You don't want that. I think you either have to go offensive head coach who's going to call the plays, or you bring in a guy who's kind of in need of some coaching rehab, I guess is the way you could put it. Like, Cliff Kingsbury had to rehabilitate his image and now is back in head coaching conversations. You need to find a guy like that.
Yeah, and you make a great point about establishing your name again as a head coach, because the Titans right now and under Brian Callahan are doing something the Carolina Panthers started a few years back, and that's just turning their franchise into a dumpster fire. And to the point of being, when you do that, coaches don't want to come to those franchises.
Yeah.
Like, Dave Canales right now, rough. It's rough. Now, you go look at the Titans, same situation. Brian Callahan, it's rough. What coach really wants that? Only coaches like, I'm going to throw it out there, like a John Gruden or a Mike McCarthy, who want to get back into coaching.
Yeah.
Like, you mentioned Cliff Kingsbury. I mentioned Joe Brady. They're in comfortable spots right now as offensive coordinators. In those spots, I don't think they want to tarnish their name they've tried to build back up.
Yeah.
That's the issue I have.
The old adage is there's only 32 of them, and it's like, if you're going to get one of 32, odds are you're not going to turn that down. But we've seen it before. Like, Ben Johnson turned down the Washington job.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't shock me if somebody was a little bit turned off by the constant turnover here in Nashville. But it is one of 32, and I agree. I think somebody who is trying to get back in would take it. And that's, I mean, it's going to be Mike McCarthy, right? Like, that's kind of what it feels like. Obviously, I would bet, like, the field would have better odds. We're not saying that
right.
Mike McCarthy's a minus 150 favorite, but I'd say he's the favorite at probably, like, plus 300 somewhere around there.
That's pretty good odds, honestly.
Right, like, it seems to make too much sense of what the Titans will want and the connection that's there. How would you guys feel about that out there? 615-737-1025. If Mike McCarthy was the guy to replace Brian Callahan, do you think that could be the right move to get this team back on track? Or are you maybe in the camp of trying to go get somebody who we haven't seen get fired twice before, which I would get? 615-737-1025 is our phone number. You can text or call. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll continue the conversation on the other side. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Up 1025 The Game, Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'd love to hear from you if you want to text or call. Having the way too early conversation about who could be the Titans' next head coach. And, you know, I hate that we're having this conversation on September 23rd. I wish we could be previewing the Texans game and actually caring about the result, but a win on Sunday doesn't change all that much, except for maybe delaying the inevitable that the Titans are going to need a new head coach, and they need to find somebody who can, first off, make the team better around Cam Ward, but also develop Cam Ward. And obviously Mike Borgonzi tasked with adding some talent to this roster as well. We mentioned three names: Mike McCarthy, Cliff Kingsbury, Joe Brady. And all three of them have kind of, they're all offensive guys, but all of them have different resumes, different aspects that you may like about them. Brady is obviously the up-and-comer. McCarthy maybe is a little bit more of a known commodity of, like, yeah, is Mike McCarthy going to be, are we going to look back in 10 years and be like, man, we found the next Sean McVay? No, you know what Mike McCarthy is. Maybe you do find the next Sean McVay with Joe Brady. I doubt it, but, like, maybe. Cliff Kingsbury's kind of the happy medium in the middle of, like, still young, still not quite up and coming anymore, but he's part of that creative, new age offensive tree, but he also has head coaching experience, which, again, I think that is going to be number one on the Titans' priority list when they add a new head coach, is somebody who's done this before, and we don't have to worry about them knowing the rules and knowing how to handle end of half, end of game sequences, because they've done this stuff before.
Could you imagine if you go into the interview process, say you're Cliff Kingsbury, and I'm Amy Adams, or I'm Chad Brinker. So, Cliff, what do you know about an elbow touching in the ground in the field of play?
Yeah, Cliff, could you recite the catch rule for us pretty quickly?
And what is your two-minute offense going into halftime? What is that looking like?
Yeah, Cliff, you know, 2 minutes left on the clock. You're around midfield, down by 11. Over or under 4.5 straight run plays before you start throwing the ball?
Could you imagine?
An easy interview for sure.
Right.
I think all three of us could pass it.
Yeah. It's not the Wonderlic test. It's easier than that.
Ball on your own 7.
What are you doing here?
45 bro? Seconds left in the first half. You're up by 3. How many straight throws are you trying to make down the field?
0.
You know, again, I don't like bashing on Brian Callahan, because, again, he is a nice guy. This isn't like Wiz and Hunt, who, like, we have Corey Curtis on every week. He'll be on tomorrow. And, like, Corey talks about how, like, the vibes around the two, the programs were different. Like, Brian Callahan's a really nice guy, and he seems humble enough to realize that he's made mistakes and is trying to fix them. From what I gather, Wiz and Hunt was not that way. But, like, You can't be the story 2 out of the first 3 weeks and be 0-3 and be 3-17 as a head coach. Like, it can't happen.
I think his and we've kind of talked about this ad nauseum since the spring. I think his support group underneath him, like you talk about, I think Adam Portland said Daddy Callahan. Like, yeah, it's cool to have your dad on staff, but if he's not working out, like, what's the point of having him around? I think the same thing for Nick Holtz, and I'm going to reiterate it again, sound like a broken record. He's not doing anything from what we know of outside of the walls of Titans camp.
Right. Like, I mean, come on. I'm sure Nick Holtz has responsibilities. Like, I don't love the narrative that, like, all he does is get Brian Callahan coffee. Like, he does have a purpose on this team.
Yeah.
But, yes, he is
cleans
not
his shoes as well.
He is not nearly as important as most offensive coordinators are.
I just think Brian Callahan as a head coach did not do a good job of fielding out his I guess, coaches when
yeah.
it comes to this staff. Because that's honestly what's really hurt him in a roundabout way. Obviously, his play calling and stuff like that, decision-making. But when your decision-making kind of failing you at some point, you have to rely on your guys underneath you. And has he done that? If he has, then that's just bad coaching underneath him.
Yeah, and we mentioned it last year, even before the season started, that, like, was it the best idea to have a first-time head coach, first-time play caller, hire first-time offensive coordinator, first-time defensive coordinator, first-time special teams coordinator? Probably not. And we've seen him be overwhelmed. It's kind of a fun conversation. We'll pull a little like Chasing Big Joe here and just poll the audience. What is the first interview question you'd be asking a Titans head coaching candidate after the Brian Callahan era? 615-737-1025 if you have answers. Again, like there's been plenty of snafus with Brian Callahan so far. It feels like it wouldn't be that hard to have easy answers to some of these situations, but who knows?
Are you good at Madden football? Because if you are, you're qualified. Because everyone that's good at playing Madden football is going to be a great head coach in the NFL. It's just science.
Well, Woody Johnson, I think, would say that is true. I mean, he's trying to get his Jets team up to a 99 overall.
I mean, come on now. I mean, could you imagine if somebody walked into an interview process and was like, Rex wrote again, sorry. If I was playing Madden and I walked in, here's my call sheet, and I just took screenshots from my TV. Could you imagine that? That'd be hilarious.
I'm going to run 4 verticals 8 times a game.
Give me the shock H option, and it's going to be a fade route to the receiver.
Yeah, slot fade on the shock option.
Yeah
that's a – I'm going to run – 3 plays exclusively.
What's your play call on 3rd and 8? You're playing the San Francisco 49ers in Levi's Stadium. It's 3rd and 8 on your own 40. What's your play call?
4 verts every time.
Read option to edge glitches. Yeah. I'll be able to go out wide.
Halfback slip screen. Those are the 3 plays we're calling as the new era of the Tennessee Titans. Again, yeah, if you have thoughts, let us know. What's your first interview question to a Titans head coaching candidate when they're looking for Brian Callahan's replacement? Lots of good ones. You know, what constitutes a catch, I think, would be probably one of the first ones out of my mind. Hi, can you recite every word of the NFL rulebook for us real quick? Old Chandrillin on the YouTube chat, says, do you know how to execute a screen pass? That's a good one, too. The screen passes have not been good early on this year, at the very least. And I remember last year, it might have been the first Colts game, where I thought Brian Callahan actually had a really good sequence on the first drive of the game, where he threw 2 wide receiver screens early on. And I was kind of wondering in my mind, I'm like, man, he just ran that exact same play earlier. Why are we running it again? Because the second time it got stuffed for like 1 yard. And then a few plays later, fake the screen, guy goes deep, touchdown. I believe it was NWI caught the touchdown. It's like, okay, you can see that he can do it as a play caller, but there just hasn't been enough of those moments for Brian Callahan. And a lot of it is execution. Like, the roster is not good, but it brings me back to the question we talked about earlier. Like, is it 3-17 bad? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I think it might be. I think this 3-17 is a true 3-17. I think it's just that bad.
No, I understand. I'm saying, like, they've played bad enough to be 3-17. Yeah. But, like, if you gave this roster to a competent coach, would they win more than 3 games? I think so.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think Brian Callahan, yes, you can blame the bad team for a lot of the issues, but he deserves plenty of his own blame as well.
If you gave this team to Kyle Shanahan, I say he has 4 to 5 wins.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I mean, yeah, I don't think anybody was making the playoffs with this roster, but no. Like, I think you could look like you know what you're doing a little bit more. Alex on the YouTube chat says, are you bringing relatives with you? Will your dad be joining us on the coaching staff?
No, absolutely not.
And I that one just confounds me all the time. Like, how is Bill Callahan not better in Nashville? Like, he is a legendary offensive line coach. How has he just not been able to figure it out with this group?
You know, I've thought about that a few times as well. Could it just be he's out of his prime as a coach?
Right.
Is that possible?
Or
to
maybe
say?
Maybe he doesn't want to fully do things his own way because he doesn't want to step on his son's toes. Like, I don't know if I don't know. We're not in the room every single day, but it's just so strange that a guy with such a pedigree of, you know, not having the most talent on an offensive line, but finding a way to make them work together as a group and be productive. And that just hasn't happened here.
What if it's the other way? What if Bill Callahan is basically puppets on a string for his son?
I don't think so.
I mean, you never know.
Bill Callahan, the man behind the curtain.
I'm just saying, because all these conversations are kept behind closed doors.
That is true.
Just
he said that a lot. Dustin from Hopkinsville says, will you fight every opposing coach on the opposite sideline for my team? And the answer better have the most serious look. It's not a joke. We'll run through a wall for this team because the team's going to follow that coach, mimic his personality. I want a dog again. With that being said, obviously Miami's coach isn't getting interviewed. Are you sure you don't want to see Mike McDaniel bare-knuckle brawling with Mike Vrabel?
No.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. More to come on the Titans throughout the show. We asked the question, is this roster 3-17 bad? We'll look at the roster coming up in the final hour of the show. Who are we confident is going to be part of the core that will get this team competitive again? We'll talk about that later on. But we got to start looking ahead at Saturday night because it might be the best Saturday night of college football we get this year. Penn State, Oregon, Georgia, Bama. How are we going to give both these games the attention they deserve? We'll talk about it next. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you. Going to get back into the Titans in the final hour of the show, but we have a big college football weekend coming up. We've got maybe a rematch of last year's Big Ten championship between Penn State and Oregon. And we got Georgia-Alabama with Bama needing a win. If Bama wins that game, start to put them back in the playoff conversation. And they're both going on at the same time. How are we going to give both these games the attention they deserve? Is this a multi-screen at home kind of night? Is this a go out to the bar and watch both of them? I don't know how we can give both these games our full and undivided attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be a multi-screen type of weekend, Jake. I'm all for the six box is what we're doing, or the octo box, the eight box, something like that. There's no way you can, you know, consume all this, you know, at different times. You got to do it all at once.
Right.
Overstimulate your body a little bit.
It's tough. I am glad Vandy plays at 11:45, so I'll be out there at First Bank Stadium in the morning and into the afternoon, but should be home by halftime of LSU Ole Miss. By the way, you see the bulletin board material getting posted for LSU Ole Miss?
Landry Kiffin.
Yeah, Lane. Apparently this was well known, and I did not know this. I guess Landry Kiffin didn't officially announce this yesterday, but it was the first time it went mainstream, that she is dating LSU linebacker Whit Weeks. And the tweet yesterday from Lane Kiffin had me laughing out loud in my apartment last night, just sitting there, where I guess one guy was like, "Wow, Lane Kiffin's daughter is dating LSU's linebacker. This reeks of the over." And Lane Kiffin responds, "Take the over." So that's going to be a fun one. That's at 2:30 on ABC, and then I mentioned the two games later. Actually, you know what? While we're here, 3:15 on SEC Network.
Yes,
Tennessee, Mississippi State.
War.
I have to make one public service announcement. All right. How on God's green earth are my Mississippi State Bulldogs not ranked? You beat Arizona State, who was ranked 12th at the time. I get it. You struggle a little bit against Northern Illinois. That's nothing to worry about. They ended up winning that game 38-10, whatever it was. That's fine. They're not blowing teams out like Vandy 70-14 is what it was.
70-21.
70-21. Like, putting up a 70 burger, I get that. Tennessee's a good ball club, all right? I'm fine with that. This is going to be a good ball game. But I'm a little hurt and disrespected that the AP poll and coaches poll, neither of them wanted to put Mississippi State in the top
25. Preach it. Preach it, Frazier. It's because the AP poll's corrupt, man. They don't actually watch the games.
No.
That video from Haley Sawyer just represents perfectly what the AP poll does. They sit back and they sip their coffee and they button their suits all the way up to the top where they can barely breathe, and they go and they hang out at the country club. They don't watch the games.
I
watch them. I have Mississippi State ranked. It's okay. I respect the Bulldogs.
There's an Ohio State reporter who has an AP poll vote that doesn't have Tennessee in the top 25. I don't understand how that works. And then it's funny, there was one poll that had Vandy in the top 10 last week, and then they win 70-21 and they move them out of the top 10. It's like, it'll never make sense to me. Mississippi State is just outside of the top 25. They are the second highest team receiving votes.
Look, if Mississippi State loses on Saturday, I get that. That's fine. They'll probably drop way down where they won't be ranked until like later on in the season, whatever it may be. But it's not for Mississippi State's resume. It's for Tennessee's resume if they end up beating Mississippi State. On paper, it'll be a good ball game back and forth, but everybody's going to look at, was it a ranked Mississippi State team? Probably not. And they weren't, obviously.
Well,
so that kind of hurts them a little bit.
Just in terms of losses, like Tennessee can't afford to lose this game.
Right.
Because if you lose this game, you have to run the table the rest of the way. You've got to beat Alabama. You got to beat Oklahoma. You got to beat Vanderbilt. All ranked games coming up the rest of the way. So this is a big game on the road. The cowbells will be clanging. That is a 3:15 kick on the SEC Network, the Tony versus PK Bowl.
I'm so in awe that Blake Shapen, after his little injury last year, has decided to show up and play football.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I think Jeff Lebby now has fans bought in. I just had to believe it to see it. I said it a few weeks back that I think this team's going to go bowling. Obviously, now being 4-0, it feels pretty comfortable with doing that. Brennan Thompson, the wide receiver they got, transfer wide receiver, one of the fastest in all of, you know, the nation, he's been showing up as well. So I'm excited for this game. I'm intrigued to see how Tennessee matches up in Starkville, if they can handle the chaos, but that's just, we're going to have to see it at 3:15.
6:30 on Saturday night on NBC and Peacock, Oregon, Penn State. Number 6, Ducks. Number 3, Nittany Lions. 6:30 on ABC. Number 17, Alabama. Number 5, Georgia. I'm looking at these ticket prices. They have them listed on the ESPN. Like, you've got a couple big ones. Auburn, Texas A&M, $157 is the get-in price. LSU Ole Miss is a little over $200. To get into Oregon, Penn State for the whiteout game in Beaver Stadium is $385. Just to get in. One ticket. Alabama, Georgia at Sanford Stadium in Athens, $425. That is how good these games are this weekend. And I got to say, for the Penn State game, James Franklin, this is a game you have to win.
Yeah.
Like, you are the number 3 team in the country. You're at home for a whiteout, which, by all regards, one of the best atmospheres in all of the country. A whiteout at Penn State is so tough to play at. You got to win this game. If you're going to prove the allegations that you can't win the big one wrong, this is one you have to win. Prove that you are a college football playoff contender. That's a big one. And then Alabama, Georgia. If Alabama goes to 2-2 with Vandy coming in next week, that becomes a must-win game for Kalen DeBoer, or he will be packing his bags. Now, it might be a must-win either way, but Alabama, it's going to be tough going to Sanford Stadium. I know they won last year in Tuscaloosa in what was an instant classic between the Tide and the Bulldogs. This one, Alabama's got to play desperate. Georgia, we saw against Tennessee, Georgia's beatable. But this one is, it's between the hedges, going to be a tough one for the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, Alabama definitely have their backs against the wall going into this. I mean, if Ryan Williams ends up showing up and playing well,
right,
I think they have a good chance at beating Georgia. But Georgia and Nate Frazier, not my cousin, but we have the same last name. You could say he's my cousin, roundabout way. Great run game with him in Georgia. I think he's a good running back. I think Georgia figured some things out offensively when it came to playing Tennessee, that they should utilize the tight end position a little bit more, and they did. And so if they do that against Alabama, I think they'll put Alabama in a blender.
I like it. I can't wait to watch these games. 6:30 Saturday night. You're going to have to dual screen it. You can't miss either of them. Oregon, Penn State, Alabama, Georgia. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Luke is on the line wanting to chime in. Luke, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
What do you think is more egregious, that Notre Dame is ranked with a 1-2 record, or that Mississippi State is sitting on the outside looking in?
Well,
ooh, that's a good question.
Luke, I can answer that question easy for you. There's a lot of TV money involved with Notre Dame, and I heard Kirk Herbstreit on, I think it was College Game Day last weekend, he's predicting that Notre Dame wins out, and it's primarily because they have that individual playoff, you know, TV contract, whatever it is with Notre Dame. They get all that money in there. So I think that's the only reason why they're ranked 22, because the rest of their schedule is pretty easy for them to win out. I mean, they look at A&M, and then you look at the Miami losses. If those two teams end up having one loss in their schedule making the playoff, it only bodes well for Notre Dame. As a Mississippi State guy, yeah, it does suck. I would say it hurts more to see Notre Dame in there, but I understand why.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I think Notre Dame, you're a two-loss team, but you lost basically on the last play of the game to two top 10 teams. So I understand why they're still ranked, but also I don't see another two-loss team getting any votes whatsoever, which, yeah, Notre Dame, the strength of schedule should play a factor, but, yeah, if you flipped Mississippi State and Notre Dame, I feel like the poll looks pretty good, actually.
Also, why in the world is Illinois ranked?
Yeah.
They lost by 0.5 last week.
You lose 63-10. Usually that is grounds to knock you out of the poll. Like, you got Auburn and Mississippi State sitting right there. I think both those teams deserve to be in, probably over Notre Dame and Illinois. We've got some Illinois-Indiana bias, Big Ten bias in the poll.
I would say it only bodes well for USC, because you look at their resume, they're probably going to handle Illinois, you know, handedly by 20 points.
Yeah.
Illinois, I mean, USC is a good ball club. Like, I watched them take on Michigan State last week as I was putting up stuff in the backyard. That team is hitting on all cylinders. They just throw the ball well. They move the ball just fluidly. I just think that's something to watch out for. USC is a top 10 team coming up.
I do like USC. Jane Maeva is a good player. Lincoln Riley, he had a lot of weight on his shoulders coming into this year to try and prove that he can be the guy there. And so far, they've gotten off to a good start. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. News in college basketball yesterday. Bruce Pearl retiring. And the timing of this, I think, is going to start to become a trend across college basketball. We'll get into that. Also, Paul Kaharsky tweeting about 20 minutes ago that Brian Callahan is going to speak briefly to reporters ahead of coordinators today. He doesn't usually talk on Tuesdays. So we'll keep an eye on that, see if that is nothing or if there's a reason he's speaking on a Tuesday for the first time this year. We will talk some Bruce Pearl coming up next. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Wrapping up hour number two, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you. I wanted to get into Bruce Pearl here, but I might audible with the news that Brian Callahan's going to speak at the top of the hour. And I'm wondering what it could be. Like, obviously, he's not announcing his own firing. Like, it's nothing that big. I think he's going to give up play calling.
Interesting.
Like, I think that's the plan, and I think it's a last-ditch effort from Brian Callahan to save his job. We'll see if it works out, but I can't think of anything else that it would be that would cause Brian Callahan to speak before the coordinators, because I'm sure that he wants to get that out there before Nick Holt speaks. Anything else that it could be?
I mean, maybe he mentions Bill Hardigree's calling plays besides Nick Holtz. Like, that's the only other audible I could think of. I mean,
yeah.
I have a joke that we kind of talked about in the break. Maybe he's getting an extension, but we all doubt
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I saw a tweet of, like, Callahan's announcing his own extension through 2029. Maybe it's a clarification on something. Like, maybe there's something he said yesterday that he wants to get out in front of and correct, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head. And, like, honestly, wouldn't that be something he'd just have his comm staff do? Like, they could just tell yeah. the reporters who are there, like, hey, before we start the weekly press conference with the coordinators, Coach Callahan said this yesterday. He wanted to clarify, blah, blah, blah. Like, I feel like you don't need to step up and actually say something. So I think he's going to give up play calling, which I get it. It's like, if you want to save your job, you do whatever you can, but I don't think this is going to end up mattering in the long run, except for except for what we see from Cam Ward. Like, man, it would be – it's kind of a lose-lose situation for Callahan, right? Because it's like either the play calling is still bad, you're still bad, and you get fired, or the play calling immediately gets better, and people are like, then why have you been calling plays this entire time if you had no idea what you were doing? It's kind of – there's really no winning for Brian Callahan if he does announce that.
And honestly, like – again, we've joked about, like, what does Nick Holtz really do? Like, if it is Nick Holtz getting the green light to call plays and it does work out for him or it doesn't work out for him, whatever it may be, say the writing is on the wall for Callahan to be gone in the next couple weeks, maybe this is Callahan saying, hey, you're one of my friends I grew up with, played high school ball with. Get some reps at calling plays. Maybe there's another job out for you there after I'm gone, and maybe if you're going with me, like – we can go our separate ways. Maybe you find an OC job somewhere else, you know?
Like, yeah. Like,
that's the only thing I can think of as well.
I think it's a last-ditch effort. I think it's a desperation effort for him to try and save his job. And we'll see. They actually are going to air this live. So we will bring this to you live at 11 a.m. and hear what he has to say. But Brian Callahan going to speak to the media, an unscheduled appearance that has popped up ahead of the coordinators. The only thing I can think of is he's giving up play calling, but we will see what he has to say coming up at 11. We do have a couple minutes. I do want to touch on Bruce Pearl while we have a chance here. Bruce Pearl announces yesterday that he is resigning as the head coach of Auburn basketball, and his son, Steven, is going to take over as the interim head coach. We saw this last year with Tony Bennett, where he waited until the season officially started and practices started, and then he announced he was stepping down. I think this is going to start to be a trend in college basketball of these coaches want to be able to pick their successor. So they're going to wait until it is too inconvenient for the athletic department to do a coaching search so they can just say, oh, well, I'm stepping down. Here's your coach. And Bennett did it last year. I believe the guy Bennett brought in got fired, I think. Or not fired, but was not retained as the permanent head coach.
Right.
I don't know if they'll do that with Bruce Pearl's son. But I just thought it was interesting, like Bruce Pearl doing the exact same thing as Bennett last year, waiting till the last possible second and then announcing it. And now his son, the head coach at Auburn.
I mean, good for Bruce Pearl. If he's content with this, hey, happy for you, man. But, you know, there's that the whole rumors about him, you know, running for Senate and all that, like outside of basketball. If this has some, you know, factors into it, we'll see. I think he addressed some media yesterday or earlier today about that.
They asked him if he was going to run for Senate,
yeah,
and he said no.
Yeah, so I, again, who knows?
It's very interesting that coaches have started to do this, and I guess you can only do it when you've gotten to a certain level of respect, because, like, if you're a bad coach and you're just going to resign, they're not going to let you pick your successor. They're going to figure it out. But for Tony Bennett, who obviously had won a national championship, Bruce Pearl's taken Auburn to two Final Fours, it's like you kind of have given yourself this leeway of, guess what? If I want to step down a month before the season, I can, I will, and I'm going to tell you who the head coach is going to be. And, I mean, we're seeing it more and more. These guys are trying to set up their kids to be head coaches. Bill Belichick. It's in the contract that his son – also, Steven is going to be the head coach at UNC when he decides to move on. So, nepotism at its finest.
That's good negotiating.
Right. It is. I mean, I guess it's true. Bruce Pearl found some leverage, and now his son is going to be coaching an Auburn team that went to the Final Four last year. I did see Chad Baker Mazzara put out on his Instagram story. Also, Chad Baker Mazzara, the 26-year-old playing college basketball?
Yeah, I think he turns 27 this year.
Yeah, like he said, now you know why. So I guess that's why he transferred, because he's at USC now.
Interesting.
With the importer, Eric Musselman. So anyway, just quick thoughts there on Bruce Pearl stepping down. Heck of a career for Bruce Pearl. Lots of controversy in there. But, you know, two Final Fours with Auburn, nearly got them to the national championship in 2019, if it wasn't for a horrible call that allowed UVA to advance, but we won't get into that. But he steps down, and we are going to see his son take over an Auburn team that hopes to contend again. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Big news in the last 20-30 minutes. Brian Callahan is going to speak at 11 o'clock. And on our YouTube chat, Alex asked, could he be resigning could Callahan's dad be stepping away? I mean, he's not stepping up there to resign.
No, he's just throwing away money.
I don't think he's going to step up there and say that I'm not going to coach the team anymore. Maybe it's Bill. I don't know. Most likely, it's that he's giving up play calling. And we are going to hear from him live coming up. Brian Callahan, an unscheduled appearance with the media. He's going to speak ahead of the coordinators coming up at 11 o'clock. We will bring that to you live. And it's in its entirety, to let you know what Brian Callahan could be announcing, clarifying, whatever he's going to do with this media session. That's coming up next as we start off hour number three of the program. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you on this Tuesday. Next man up, 102.5 The Game.